From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So this would be The Media Project for this week. Happy holidays to all. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and Judy Patrick, the editor of the Daily Gazette. Hello.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, indeed.
Whoa. What a thing.
That's true. We shouldn't say happy holidays. There's some political message implicit in that, I suppose.
What's the political message?
Well, we're not saying Merry Christmas. You know, the president has vowed to put Christmas back into... I don't know. It's a Fox News thing, you know.
Yeah, I don't watch Fox News. So apparently you do, Rex.
Well, it's this whole notion that emerged about 10 years ago that there was a war on Christmas, that too many people were saying happy holidays. And so the Christian right took exception to that. And every year I get messages from people saying, why doesn't the Times Union ever say Merry Christmas? Well, we are not a holiday greeting card, you know. We're a newspaper, but
and you don't want to offend anybody. On the other hand, it is pretty much of a Christian nation, isn't it?
No, sir.
It isn't.
No.
Well, in terms of the numbers of people, I'm thinking about that. I always ask my students, being Jewish myself, what percentage of America is Jewish, and it's always fascinating to see what they come up with. I've had students say 50%. Well, it's in fact less than 2% of the entire country. So I always find that very interesting. Don't you?
Yes, I think people don't understand that, but it's not just that. America is more religious than almost any nation in the developed world. I should say more pious. There is a certain piety about Americans.
And you recognize that as an editor of a great metropolitan newspaper, as they say?
Metropolitan, thank you. We do still run a page on Saturdays, Faith and Values, and I think journalists are not real good about covering religion. We're uncomfortable with the topic, so I'm glad to have an opportunity that, you know, forces us every week to look at some of these issues. Do you run religion coverage at all?
We do. We do on Saturdays. God Notes is what we call them. But also...
not in print. You don't.
No, we don't call that in print. But on Christmas morning, we will have a banner that says... Mm-hmm. Merry Christmas on the top of our front page. We've always done that. And one year, we forgot to say Happy Thanksgiving, and I've got probably 50 calls.
No kidding.
Yeah. People want their newspaper to be like a greeting card. You know, we do that too. We have a coloring contest for children in grades K through 12. And every year, one of my great duties is to pick the grand winner from among the 13 in each age category and make that the centerpiece of our Christmas Day paper.
Well, but it seems to me that there are people who are of every religion who would get mad at you if you don't recognize their religion. So, for example, on Hanukkah, you would hear from some Jewish constituents.
That is true. We always have something noting the beginning of Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm. Right. We as well. And it's a failure when I have forgotten something or overlook something because we're overlooking a segment of our community.
That's why they make calendars, Judy.
Not anymore.
That's right. Who makes calendars? Or Pearl Harbor Day, for example. I remember every year I get phone calls of people being angry at me. Well, you didn't cover Pearl Harbor Day. Well, actually, a newspaper tends to publish what happens.
That day.
And so, we tend to publish what happened on Pearl Harbor Day observances on the day after Pearl Harbor Day. But people are not appreciative of that. So
I have had that exact same conversation.
Yep.
And nothing happened on December 6th that we can write about for December 6th.
Right.
Right. Well, you could probably find somebody who would say, you know, I was there, I remember it, and it's coming up tomorrow, and I hope all Americans will do what they need to do.
You can't anymore. Actually, the Capital Region, this is the first year that the Capital Region's Pearl Harbor Day observance did not have any Pearl Harbor survivor. The last one died during the year.
Wow. That's very interesting, Rex.
Thank you very much. So this is the Media Project, as we said, and we're going to get into some issues beyond those that we've already been discussing. We are Judy Patrick and Ellen Chartok and Rex Smith here from the studios of WAMC on lovely Central Avenue in downtown Albany, New York. Albany, New York, which was one of America's five greatest cities as recently as the census of 1820. So there you go.
And 1820.
As recently as that.
Well, so, were you being sardonic when you said, lovely Central Avenue? Because, Central Avenue in Albany has its problems. So I was wondering whether your tongue was way back in your cheeks.
Well, Central Avenue is kind of cool. It's always been the avenue of immigrants in this city. And mm-hmm. So, the churches along Central Avenue used to be places where you'd have your Spanish language congregation, your German language, your Polish language congregation.
And now some of those churches are up for sale.
That's right. And there are mosques along Central Avenue. So yeah. It remains the avenue of immigrants.
In mm-hmm. fact, one of the great stories of the last decade, maybe the last decade, I remember it quite well, was when the FBI came along. We have a mosque on the street and arrested some people for trying to sell Stinger missiles.
Yeah, it was a sting. It was a setup, actually, and became quite a celebrated case. And by coincidence, the pizza shop owner they had arrested had been part of a big series we had done about Central Avenue. We'd interviewed the guy. So
you had some egg on your face.
No, actually, we had access to the suspects, and it was actually quite handy. And I happened to be in Washington that day, and I went to the press conference that was conducted by the Deputy Attorney General, a guy named Jim Comey.
Wow.
So
that is cool.
Isn't that cool? Witness to history and all that stuff. Speaking of history, history has been made. The FCC is repealing net neutrality, and we ought to talk about what the impact of that might be on local news. So, the deal is this could create tolls for internet companies and sort of tiers of access for consumers, because net neutrality had assured that everybody who was getting access to the superhighway of the internet would have the same access at the same price. And so there's a question about what the bad news about this might be.
Anyone who runs a website knows that the ability to have your page load fast or to people to access the video quickly or to the audio quickly is essential to the success of your website. And if it's harder for people to get to it or the upload or the download times are slower, you're at a real disadvantage. And don't mistake yourself. This is going to really hurt the small players. And by small players, I mean local newspapers and local radio stations and local TV stations.
Well, this is unbridled capitalism. That's what this is all about. Take every control off everything and let the best person win. I don't want to say man because you're here, Judy, and I know that you would resent that.
It's not the best. It's the biggest, I think, will win.
You're right.
Absolutely. There you go. It's a triumph, as Alan says, of money over equality, over the access that people have. And, the fact is the whole notion of the internet was, in terms of information, that it would be a great democratizing effect, that independent news could yield more competition and more voices. But the problem is now a lot of those smaller voices may well be stifled.
Now, our audience thinks this is a very important subject, and we're hearing from many of them all the time on this. Nevertheless, I heard an NPR story as we speak today in which they made it clear that this as a major issue, not like tax reform or other things, had really not caught on with the general public. Maybe with the intellectual mm-hmm. people who often care and listen to public radio, maybe not always reading, your newspapers who do this. And I always look at Judy's face to see if she's going to strike me.
No. Well, it has a boring name, net neutrality. Yeah. People have a hard time getting their heads around it. Anytime we write a story about it, nobody really reads those stories.
Yeah. And now you can tell by the clicks, right?
Exactly. And I'm not even sure they're going to notice it once it starts to happen. They're just going to think, oh, it's easier for me to go to Amazon than to go to my local site. It's easier to go to the New York Times than the Times Union.
Absolutely. Yeah. It could be a great frustration. So, what can you do? It is elections have consequences. This would not have happened, obviously, under an FCC with a leader chosen by Hillary Clinton had she won.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's right. So I'm really in love with this concept of being able to judge what you guys are putting out there based on how many clicks you get on it. And that's fascinating. I recently heard from an editor of a newspaper that it's an extraordinary columnist who gets more clicks on an average day than a top news story does, for example. That columnist would be me. So I thought I would just mention that.
Oh, cool. Kudos to you. Now, the other thing, are they looking at how long they're reading your story? Are they just going in for 10 seconds, or are they reading the whole thing? Are you having a lot of time on site?
No, I do not know.
I don't know.
Probably reading the whole thing through, spending a minute and a half or two.
Well, I don't know. I think Alan probably gets 10 seconds, don't you think?
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
Yeah.
You certainly shouldn't.
No, actually, this is one of the interesting topics that our producer, David Gassina, suggested we should talk about today is recirculation, talking about topics that are important, that words that people don't even think about. It's supposedly the key metric for news publishers next year. Recirculation.
What does that mean?
No, there you go.
Is it when they put blood in your body?
It is not.
It's if you read one story and then you're going to go someplace else on the same site. What they're trying to do is build loyalty to this particular website, and you do it by serving people as much interesting content as you can again and again and again. That increases your ability to be found on the internet. And also, our goal at the Daily Gazette is to eventually convince someone that they need to pay and be a subscriber and stay at. There's so much great content that they're going to stay.
I'm sure our audience is much smarter than I am, but I still have no idea what the hell you're talking
about. Recirculation, so that you click to another story on the site after the one. So that, for example, you may build in links into a story so that people say, as they're reading along this, they see another story. The New York Times is great at this, by the way.
But quite frequently, those links will take you somewhere else.
Aha! That's exactly right.
That's okay.
That's interesting. Well, it's not as good for you.
It's true.
It's true. And here's, for example, the Empire Report.
An excellent thing. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean,
JP Miller.
Yeah. Right. I mean, of course, they don't do any journalism of their own. They're just making use of our stuff.
So what?
Well, so I'm just saying.
How proprietary and snotty can you be, Rex?
Well, I'm just saying.
He's just calling an aggregator.
It's just an aggregator. That's all it is. I'm just saying he doesn't do any journalism. He is just an aggregator.
But it's a great service. I go there.
Well, I'm glad that you like it.
Quite often my columns and things will be at the very top of that group, EmpireReport.com.
And why do you suppose that would be?
I don't know.
Do you think being at the top increases your chances of getting a click?
Do you think? Here's the great thing that he does, though. This is very clever on JD's part, whom I don't know, by the way.
JP, sorry.
When you click on any headline on this aggregation page, it takes you to the homepage of the Empire Report. And whatever headline you click on, you have to go back to the homepage again. And then you have to click on it again to get to the actual piece instead of taking you off the site right away. So, for example, if he's using a Times Union story, and you see that headline and you say, I want to read that, you click on it, and first you're taken back to the homepage of the Empire Report
before you get to the Times Union.
No, when I do it,
I always go to you. It'll take me right to you. And since I'm a subscriber to your paper, what always bothers me is sometimes they come up in some of these papers and they say, do you want to pay for this product? Which is interesting because I am a subscriber and they can't justify my... Do you understand what I'm talking about?
I do, but you know, there was a time when editors just put stories on paper pages. And now, as you heard Rex explain, we have to worry
about... Try to explain.
We have to worry about all the links, how the sites are functioning, how our content is being recirculated. And, you know, all these metrics, it's a whole different ballgame.
It really is. It's a very difficult thing. And so, you know, all the expertise.
I think it's all for the good myself.
Well, except it's not so good. It is not, in fact, all for the good.
All for the good.
It's because, you know, it's actually, as Judy was pointing out, it's going to have, a lot of these policies are going to have the effect of really damaging the kind of good journalism, local journalism that we do.
Well, respectfully to both of you. Don't you think a case could be made that it's too late, that the print media is in a downward spiral?
Well, print is certainly not going to, paper is not going to survive. We're probably not going to have paper in the 22nd century. But the problem is local journalism has to survive. And I don't know what your news reporters are going to do when they don't have us to draw
from. That is so condescending and snotty and pompous.
Rip and read. But they don't do that anymore because there's no papers.
There's no papers. You can't rip and read.
But I must say, it was very interesting this week. Rex is sitting here, so I thought I'd give him a little nudge. You know, the Times Union has been doing excellent reporting on the predatory practices, alleged, of the mayor of Cohoes, New York.
Cohoes, New York. I'm glad you know about Cohoes. What a guy.
Cohoes, yes. Uh-huh. And so the mayor, who has been unbundled before the masses by the Times Union newspaper, yours, called the WMC and did an extraordinary interview with WAMC in which he pointed the finger at the mayor of Albany, a lady mayor, who said he should resign because of these accusations. And he pointed the finger at her and said there had been 911 calls to her house.
Did he provide any substantiation of that? Did your reporter ask him to provide details?
Oh, yeah.
And he said, and he said what?
Well, no.
He said you would have to call her and ask.
Right.
So what about if your reporter was interviewing somebody who said, you know, Alan Chartok, he has had bad things happen to him. What about the women he's harassed, for example? And if the reporter said, what are you talking about? He would say, you have to talk to Alan about that.
Yeah.
So do you think that's fair to air that?
No, I think that's a very good point you're making.
Yeah, I think that so we didn't actually publish his allegation about the mayor of Albany because he didn't provide any substantiation. And I think that by innuendo, he basically manipulated your news report.
Well, no, he just said something important, and then
I don't think it was important. I think it was inappropriate to publish.
Well, it's interesting that your ace reporter, Casey Seiler, had been tweeting it out, what happened on the station. It may not have been in the paper. And that may be substantiation once again of the idea that you guys editorialize by deciding what's news and what's not.
Well, I think we make valid journalistic judgments. Thank you, by the way, for your kind comments about our investigative reporting about Mayor Morse.
It was very good.
But, another interesting facet about that Cohoes case is the attack that the mayor has made on the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to being criticized by politicians. It happens all the time. But the level of the attack on this one was extraordinary. And I think that it reflects what's happening nationwide.
Indeed. It sounds very much like Donald Trump.
Exactly. So the Trumpian tone has really imbued not only domestic politics, but international as well, right? Lots of the strongmen around the world are using the same term.
And, I wanted to raise that with you, Rex, if you're the moderator and the boss of this program. But I did want to raise with you the idea that we had had a major senatorial election in Alabama. Now, ordinarily, the Media Project might not be talking about it because it's pure politics, but it has gone into the point where this election has changed probably the dynamic of American politics and has gone from Alabama into everything else in terms of Steve Bannon, who hates the press and what he's been able to do. And this seemed to be a rejection of Trump and Bannon, and I think has tremendous media implications.
Well, it's interesting. You hear a lot of the commentators. One of the characteristics of media coverage these days is that television is just filled with commentators. And so news coverage has taken on so much flavor. The analysis is instant and it's quite partisan. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting result. Of course, if 50,000, 100,000, however many it is, 50,000 voters in Alabama had gone a different direction,
sure,
we'd be singing a very different tune at this point.
I think it comes out about 20,000, not a lot.
Yeah. It's quite a big deal.
But it is interesting how that one election for one United States senator in a special election has affected the politics of this nation. And I don't believe there's probably an editorial page in America which hasn't made mention of it.
Yeah, that's probably true, the effect of it. And although editorial pages, you wonder how much effect editorial pages have. Every newspaper, save one in the U.S., declined to endorse Donald Trump last time.
That's right.
And still he won the Electoral College.
That's because, in Trump's words, the press is the enemies of the people.
Yeah. And the question is, will other politicians adopt the tactics of Donald Trump and of Roy Moore and indeed the mayor of Cohoes, Sean Morse, and just so violently attack the press? You know, our coverage has been very careful. The investigative report that we did, here's an interesting fact,
on
by
the
way,
mayor of,
on the mayor of Cohoes.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have known about the incident involving Sean Morse, whose
wife. Where they allegedly grabbed a woman by the hair and pulled her out of a.
That was actually years ago. We actually found that out ourselves. But the initial incident involving his wife a few months ago, we wouldn't have known about but for social media. But then, of course, getting to it, finding out the details of it, and getting the documentation to back up the allegation, that was really good, strong investigative reporting by Brendan Lyons, our investigations editor. But the initial report, we might not even have known about if it weren't for social media. Isn't that interesting?
You know, yes, that is interesting.
You know, the bottom line here is there are these attacks on the press that trying to undermine our credibility, undermine what we do, and that is so horrible for democracy, for the functioning of society, and it's for political gain. Let's, you know, call it what it is. This is an intentional campaign to undermine our ability to hold government and people in power accountable.
And yet, if so many people have their own negative feelings about the press, and we know that they do, polling all shows that, this plays right into that, doesn't it?
It does. And you know, we make mistakes. That has happened. But,
sure.
But that doesn't justify. We've never had a president who was so aggressively attacking the media and undermining the First Amendment in this way. I think it's absolutely unpatriotic.
It is, and it really leads us down the road to fascism, if you really think about it.
Because by the way,
that's what all of the great dictators did.
Here's something good, though. The governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, has signed a bill strengthening the freedom of information law. In this sense, it has always been, in recent years it has been, that judges have been able to award attorney's fees if you successfully win access to documents that you should have had under the freedom of information law, and if government blocks you and you eventually get it. But now he has signed a law saying that that you shall, not just may, but you shall get your lawyer's fees back if you have prevailed and if government, in a contravention of the law, intentionally withheld the documents from you.
Good for him, because he's not getting high grades on the way he is treating the press, either by having enough press conferences, which he doesn't do,
yeah,
or in a really bad moment took off after our Karen DeWitt, a brilliant reporter, who got in his face and asked him a simple question, mm-hmm, about why he had hired somebody with a history of sexual offenses. And he said, you know, you shouldn't be asking this question. And he had to apologize for it. One more thing. He's going to have to learn to control his temper.
You think? Yeah, he called it the question a disservice to women, which, whoa, that's a bit inappropriate.
Yeah, who is he?
Right. Yeah.
It's an exchange worth watching. It's available on YouTube, on the internet, all over the place. He has apologized, but the signing of the FOIL Act was good timing, and because it had been a very bad series of weeks for the governor in terms of being criticized for not holding these press conferences, for not answering questions, and for, you know, and actually the delay in signing this FOIL law. I don't know what took so long.
Yeah, we were worried that he was actually going to veto it, but so this is a good thing. It basically expands the ability of plaintiffs to challenge records denial. So if you are a citizen and you want access to government information, you can get it without having to have a lot of money.
But you made a very important point. You were afraid that he was going to veto it.
Yeah.
So on the heels of this contretemps with both Karen DeWitt and with the press about not holding enough press conferences, maybe that had something to do with his signing it. Don't you see?
The contretemps. Maybe so. Well, we shall have to investigate that. All right. That's all for this week. I'm afraid so. So Judy Patrick and Alan Shartok and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments. She stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspaper men meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now newspaper men are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Judy Patrick is editor of the Daily Gazette. And Rex Smith is the editor of the Times Union. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.